Hello, is anybody else on the line?
Hi,
yes,
I'm
this is Cleveland.
Hi, Cleveland. This is Marlene.
This is Darlene.
Hi, Marlene. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good.
Did you get your website set up, Cleveland?
Well, I have a meeting with the website developer on Saturday, this coming Saturday, to look over it before we set it out, before we start it up. So everything is on there that I want to be on there, and it looks good.
Oh,
but it's
cool.
Almost ready.
Oh,
but as soon
wonderful.
As I get it,
this is Dave.
As soon as
sorry,
I get it up and running.
Sorry to interrupt. Some good gossip here.
Hi, Dave.
Welcome, everybody. What kind of things would be helpful for us to talk about? Are there some clarifications or questions about anything we've talked about in the first two seminars? Are things that you'd like to elaborate or expand from what you've done in the workbook for today? I know each of you have done your homework. How are you finding the material? Is it what you expected?
A little deeper than what I expected. It's,
okay.
Um,
I'm sorry, this is?
Cleveland.
Cleveland, okay.
Yes, but it's good information, so I have to reread and reread and let it soak in. But I'm enjoying it.
Okay, well, good, good. Yeah, this is in some ways, it is a lot of material, and I always debate about I'd much rather have more of a seminar where we have discussion and back and forth. There's so much information I want to share with you. I've decided to sort of minimize the discussion at either end in order to give you more information and to have you apply that maybe as you do the exercises yourself or some of them from the workbook to see what makes sense to you, to see if looking at change in a systematic way. And
yes.
This is simply one system. This is for everybody. The roadmap, the seven steps, is simply one system to look at how to go about making change that lasts, that incorporates some of the mind and brain science principles with strategic coaching. So I know it's a lot. Are there specific questions from anyone that might be helpful to clarify or amplify anything?
David, forgive me, this is Erica, and I just got on a little bit late, so I just want to double-check I didn't miss anything that was vital as we start this segment.
No, I was just asking for any input or questions or clarifications. What would you like to talk about, anyone?
You know, I think for me, this is Erica again. What I've really found fascinating is in kind of making it more concrete, it really is the fact that, you know, our story is really our identity, and sometimes how difficult it is to, you know, once you start changing our story, it's, I guess, essentially is changing our identity and trying to then, at that point, kind of reconstruct who we are, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and you are foreshadowing what we'll be talking about especially next seminar, because the last step, the final step of the seven-step process of Roadmap is to program new identity. And I think you really have talked about just now in a very simple way. It would have taken me, you know, 5 minutes to say what you just said. It's a challenge because anytime, as we've already talked about, anytime you introduce change to anyone, there's a natural resistance and a part of our brains that oppose that, the error detection mechanism that says this is not the right way, this is not what I expect. Plus, we have a way that we are accustomed to doing things, and that's a natural way of what we expect because we know how the story turns out. Even though it doesn't go exactly where we want, it's still predictable. So repetition masquerades as effectiveness. So to begin to do something different, this is what's important, I think, in working with clients, is to know that every person you work with, every client you work with, will experience what you just said without it being in conscious awareness. Because as we've touched on, when someone has a story, that's our metaphor for understanding. Someone doesn't experience their life or their wellness or their money or their career or their relationship as a story, but that's just the way things are. So this is simply a way for us to listen, to be able to listen in an informed and a systematic way to help someone recognize, own, assess, decide what to change, and those four aspects that we talked about last time. We're going to expand that this time, but it's simply a way to collaborate together to get someone to participate and co-create either change or an evolution, a transformation to a revised story or even a new story. And ultimately, the reason that it's so hard is that it changes something as bedrock as our identity. So here's a practical, could I get a management of the background noise? Anytime you move papers or do anything with your mouthpiece, that is picked up. You don't hear it, but so if you're not commenting right now, if you would do a mute, star six, and remember to come back off mute. So just to manage the background noise. So anytime that a client experiences change, then that's going to understandably result in their anxiety or their uncertainty because they're in new territory. They've left the superhighway of the familiar in their brain, literally, of something that's become the default mode to try something different. So it's going to be uncomfortable, even anxiety-provoking. But the key is to perhaps explore for a moment, is this anxiety or is this uncertainty different in any way from what you've experienced in the past? Because how we label something, how we identify a feeling depends on what determines the mindset that we boot up to deal with it. So if we experience anxiety and trepidation and interpret it in an old model of danger equal, you know, anxiety equals danger, better head for cover, then we're going to do something and it makes sense to stop or to go back to the familiar or go to the mall. So if we help someone identify that this experience right now is different because it's more excitement than anxiety. It's uncertainty. It's trepidation. So to identify it in that way can help someone reframe it as part of a validation of a process of moving ahead so that they can self-validate ultimately that this means I'm moving ahead. This is a signpost of change. It's an indication of being in new territory and therefore to continue because ultimately that anxiety or uncertainty or trepidation will give way to effectiveness and mastery. So what you said is so important. We'll get to how that evolves in the roadmap, but that's really important to remember. So you've just highlighted something that every client experiences. Think about your transition to coaching. Whatever career story you were in, when you made a transition to coaching, remember that experience. Remember the anxiety, the uncertainty, and how important it is to label it correctly. You know, a simple example. If somebody says no and feels guilty about it, they're going to boot up a totally different mindset than if they say no and it means to them that no simply means this is not a priority right now. I appreciate it, but no thank you. A very different mindset. So be sure that you label something accurately or help your client label it accurately. So any other thoughts or comments that you'd like to touch on? Well, I'll save some time at the end, and if there's anything you want to talk about or ask about or discuss further, just jot it down, and we'll come back to it. Okay, we talked in the first two seminars, especially last seminar, about the first four steps: recognizing authorship of your story, owning your story, assessing the plot and storylines, and deciding what to change. So we're going to talk about two steps this time. Step five, map wellness strategies. So I particularly suggest that you refer to two workbook exercises, 14 steps to edit your story, page 2.12, and 5 steps to revise a storyline, page 2.14. Insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Underlying causes are always present for any problems, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a coaching approach is to use causes, feelings, and history only as information to inform an understanding of the choice architecture of now and next. Some people need nudges when they're least likely to make good choices for decisions that are difficult or rare, decisions for which they don't get feedback, when they have trouble translating into understandable terms, or when they simply persist in recreating the old story, which etches it further in the brain every time. Now, there are 6 crucial elements to map change. And when you understand and incorporate each of these 6, you have an outline to master your life story of wellness or whatever story you apply it to. And these are in your outline. 1, regulate states of mind. This is so important. I believe it's one of the most important things, if not the most important thing, we do as coaches with our clients. States of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and then how we process information and how we respond. We each have sets of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind to know what state works best for what purpose. For example, creative writing versus editing. 2 different states of mind for optimizing our peak performance in each, because they're 2 different parts of the brain. Brainstorming versus completing a project, same thing. When someone's in an emotional state, they may be marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain. The emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So how do you regulate states of mind? I believe that one of the most important things we can do to achieve success is to manage emotions and especially regulate states of mind. What do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the crucial success strategy of regulating their states of mind, using drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotions can lead to significant compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach, and the meaning you attach then determines your behavior. That's how important it is. It determines what software program you boot up to deal with the situation. Now, there are 2 primary ways to regulate our state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology is simply how we use our body to change our body, our biochemistry, to change our state of mind. Relaxation, deep breathing, brief meditation. Focus is what and how you focus on. From quantum physics and neuroscience, we get what we focus on, not what we want. Focus aligns our energy field. What we focus on, what we pay attention to, determines a state of mind. A state of mind then determines the meaning we attach to something, and the meaning we attach will determine behavior. So our power is what we focus on. So this can be something simple, like a phrase, relaxed and powerful. Or, depending on the state you want to enter, if you want to enter into sleep more effectively, relaxed to sleep. Then the quality of our life comes down to the quality of the questions we ask daily. If you get up immediately each day and begin to wonder, what's going to happen today? What am I not going to be able to handle? Or why does this always happen to me? We always ask questions of ourselves, even before we're even consciously aware of it, especially in the morning. Now, what does this mean? What should I do? And to be aware of this process, I think, can be very important because those questions establish a state of mind. So, for example, and try this. I have suggested this to a handful of clients when they have been locked into a negative cycle of mood or feeling that something bad is going to happen or not being able to get over something when there's a negative thought loop. And instead of the usual questions that they recognize that they're saying, what can go wrong today or can I really do this, just ask a better question. What will I create today that can be more powerful than I ever dreamed of and have fun doing it? I have recommended that they write down the day before, the night before, three questions that would put them in an optimum state, an empowered state, and put those beside their bed. And first thing in the morning, when they turn their bedside lamp on, before their feet ever hit the floor, to take that piece of paper and answer those questions. Asking and answering effective questions determines a state of mind. This is your power of focus. So ask habitual questions that empower you. The best mentor, leaders, and teachers are ones who ask the best questions to get us to focus our own resources. Think about how questions are so powerful with a client that we can help someone focus immediately on something to align the energy field of their brain by the question that we ask. We know this from early on. Think about an infant who's just upset all over the place and can't be consoled. What do? You change their state of mind by doing something to get them to focus, like jangling car keys. This is what a question does. Somebody's into the third paragraph of some very involved, and you ask them a question, and they refocus on something that may be more helpful depending on the nudging of your question. An example of people asking better questions. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David asked, if he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people wanted to buy a cup of coffee or a latte, but do you want a sense of community, a third place between home and work? And now, almost every move from home to work involves several opportunities. So let me give you an example of an application of self-regulation. When Southern Utah University's new basketball coach, Robert Reed, arrived, his team ranked 217th in free throw percentage, lowest in their division nationwide. They were 217 out of 217 in their division. So what Reed had his players do, because he knew how to help someone regulate a state of mind and knew that's what they needed to have peak performance in shooting free throws, he had them do three things: a cue, a focus, and a physiology. The cue, he suggested, was dribbling the ball twice. The focus was a phrase that he suggested be something like relaxed and smooth, and to take one deep breath to breathe in relaxation and to breathe out tension. After 2 years, they were number one in their division nationwide. So mantras can be used in various situations to regulate states of mind, especially for emotional triggers that can instantly change a state of mind. Some of my clients are pro athletes and actors who use it to get grounded and centered for their performance. But this can be done with any client to look at a way to use a mantra, and that can be any single cue, such as when I do a keynote, I put my index finger and thumb together on both hands, have a phrase, relaxed and powerful, and take two deep breaths in for relaxation, and I'm within 4 or 5 seconds at an optimum state of mind to do what I want to do. And this is something I will send all of you, a neural conditioning chart that is something that might be beneficial to look at. There is a further explanation. If I have time at the end of our time today, I will. But it involves being aware of emotional triggers and the instant state change that they create, and then creating a mantra to get grounded and centered, a very sort of laser application of mindful meditation to really get to use the cue, the focus, and the physiology, just like you heard in the example, to move to an ideal state. There's a further explanation of this on the webinar on my homepage of Mentor Path. It's about a 35-minute webinar called Master States of Mind, and there's a much more elaborate description of this because I think it's the most important thing that we do in mentor coaching. So that I'll leave you with that to say that's how important I think it is. And there are some examples there that will give you a better idea, and I'll send you the neural conditioning chart to look at and maybe apply as you're looking at the webinar. The number two element to map change, the power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency, like in the example that I gave a moment ago. It's like all the channels of a radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of hundreds of possibilities by what we focus on. If you want to change something in your life, change the frequency. Change your thoughts. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over, because the unconscious doesn't know the difference between positive or negative focus. So be sure what you focus on is something that you want, not something that you want to avoid or don't want. Quantum physics offers us some understanding of this. The quantum Zeno effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links become stable changes in the brain structure. In other words, the brain rewires. This concept offers explanation at a brain level for why a solution focus, which is what we do in mentor coaching, is more effective than a problem focus. What happens when you revisit or re-engage a problem, even ostensibly to work through to a solution or a better ending? It etches it further in someone's brain. That's why people get stuck in therapy at times. A possibility looks at activating new neural connections and new neurons in the brain. The brain connections literally become mind maps and then influence the reality that we see. New neuronal networks and pathways are created when you focus on solutions. Neuroscience validates that it's not the understanding of the source of our thoughts or problems that's most beneficial, but a focus on awareness of choice. Think about this is exactly what we do in mentor coaching. We focus on here and now and looking at choice architecture. And that's exactly the elements that go into the roadmap, is to become aware of how we can deconstruct our story to see how we're choosing what we're choosing so that we can do all of it consciously and in an informed way to create a map. When you have a map, you know where you are, you know where you're going, you can measure progress along the way, you know what's detour and what's distraction. Now, the law of attraction is based in neuroscience. If you lay a paper clip and a nail side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet, though, and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and can pick up the paper clip. What happens, as you know, is the molecules of the nail become aligned in the same direction, and that creates polarity and a strength. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going in the same direction and focused, you have power. In the film, The Secret, the adage is, ask, believe, and receive. Now, I think that's two-thirds correct. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It won't send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto ball for you. You know, trust me on that one. I can save you some money. But you can align your internal molecules, your energy field, to focus for a purpose and point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, and receive, I think it's really the ABCs, ask, believe, and create. In fact, my grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She said, wishes don't wash dishes. So the paradox is that we don't attract what we want, we attract what we focus on. Your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. Focusing on, for example, prosperity aligns your energy to pursue prosperity. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. A print or a negative is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. The power of focus is whatever you attend to or focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. Well, the focus is on debt. I want to lose weight. The focus is on weight and on diet. Notice which people worry about illness, which talk about pains or disorders. The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. Put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities and planning for goals rather than problems. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you don't want kind of falls away like your lap when you get up to walk. So the energy we're talking about now is not the energy of stamina, as in tired versus refreshed, but of energy field, the invisible, very real alignment in our brains. Now, quantum physics offers us still another paradigm here. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field. Einstein called this the unified field theory. He said that basically, as humans, we are bundles of energy. Our mind and body are bundles of energy and interact with the larger energy field of a group or another person. And this is how we can read people, how we can focus our choices, how we can determine the flow of our future. I think a simple example of this is in the NBA, they play 84 games a year. The teams basically, on average, lose twice as many games away as they do at home. What's different? The energy field of 60 to 80,000 people directed at each team. Negative for the away games, positive for the home games. So the law of attraction is neutral and impersonal. It works equally for positive or negative thoughts, good things or bad things. And notice how you keep coming back to what you run away from. Denial is another form of engagement. You attract what you resist because you engage it with focused emotion. So the most important aspect here is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Most focus is outside awareness. The challenge is to be specifically aware of the outcomes you want, to be strategic and planned, systematic, and to look at what you're focused on. Discover the things you're focusing on that you don't want and be aware of them. Cue your radar so that you can be aware and move to something that you do want as quickly as possible. Let's do a brief exercise here and articulate your unconscious exercise. We're on mute, so you can do this out loud. I'm going to make a statement or say a phrase, and after each one, I want you to respond with, "Your wish is my command." So I'm going to say a phrase, and you say out loud, "Your wish is my command." I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I'm eating healthily all day. I just worked out and I feel invigorated. Now, be aware of your experience after each of these, what you experienced in your body. This is the message that you're constantly giving, and this is the function of your unconscious, to make what you focus on come true. And it can happen immediately with your sense of energy or your experience and feeling. Now, thinking in this way is not magical. It requires discipline. That's why most people don't have spectacular results. Spectacular results require mind and brain mastery for consistently doing something at least 25 to 30 days without reverting back to an old pattern. And William James, the father of American psychology, said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." In other words, what to focus on. And my favorite grandmother, the secret critic, put it also very succinctly. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, lies, false pride, superiority. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, compassion." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his granddad, "Which wolf wins?" And the old Cherokee simply said, "The one you feed." Number three. Visualize changes. This is the prototype study that began a number of others in terms of visualization. Basketball players at Ohio State University were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. One group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily for 30 days. And the third group practiced imagining shooting free throws for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. They were tested at the end of 30 days. First group, no practice, 0% improvement. Second group, actual practice, 30 minutes, 24% improvement. The third group, visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, the technique has been refined, and people doing visualization only can now, in most cases, exceed the actual practice because they can do the perfect visualization each time, nothing but net. They don't have to, you know, do a shot. It's a little bit off, self-correct, and that sort of thing. So it's more effective, and it's purer. On brain imaging, the same sequence of firing occurs with visualization as with actual shooting. So the same networks are activated in the brain. So create a vision. then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch instead of a vision. Every image draws you toward its conclusion. An image, a visualization, can be like a goal. So be sure that it's positive. You create your experience. You can create exactly what you want in that experience. Create an image of yourself, of a successful attainment of something, and revisit that twice a day. You're creating a future image to live into, an experience to live into. You're also rewiring your brain. So here's a very brief focus and visualization exercise. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight, and look at those pictures twice a day, beginning and end of the day. Write down your ideal body weight range. You know, everybody varies 2 or 3 pounds. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body. In other words, your true body self. Now, remember, it has to be your body at ideal weight, and it can't be your body 25 years ago. Don't focus on losing weight or anything else negative. Don't focus on fat thoughts, you know, slow metabolism, or anything that justifies, you know, that cheesecake. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have and revisit them. When you're creating that picture, you're etching that in your brain. You're rewiring your brain. When you eat, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. Every bite is a choice. You can begin to think with full awareness, is this bite in my best interest? So that you create your body as your life intentionally. And remember the ABCs, ask, believe, and create. Visualization, and I want to mention a little bit about the art of the vision. We've talked about the science of the art of a vision is to create affirmations, the story that goes along with the vision. The affirmations support the vision and create the story that supports and furthers it. This is a way to revise mind software along the lines of and supporting the visualization that's creating a rewiring of your brain. Now, as we heard in the question at the very beginning of this this seminar that Erica asked, it's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they're part of our identity. But a vision starts at the other end, the successful outcome. If someone has a fear of success or a fear of failure, visualizing the entire experience of the successful completion bypasses that fear and etches the successful outcome. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. And again, the science of a vision, as I mentioned, visualization brings about actual physical changes in the brain, just as seeing something and it coming in through the optic nerve. The brain assimilates a mental picture, whether the stimulus is actual from the optic nerve or imagined. The brain can't tell the difference between a mental image from an actual image. Replays of the visualization, repeating the vision of successfully attaining a goal, programs neural networks and neuronal pathways to more strongly etch the experience. And it can become an important part of improving performance and peak performance. So when you program your unconscious, you're actually creating a future memory to live into. The more detailed your visual image, the more specifically etched your brain will be. Now, here's the key. You don't make the brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it into your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise or simply a not me experience. Or, yeah, that was great, but that was yesterday. This may be why 95% of people who diet gain back their weight. They don't reprogram their body image. Now, for example, if you see yourself in a successful business, you create the specific imagery to live that experience. You then incorporate it as part of your identity, as part of an evolving sense of who you are, the transformation into exactly what you want. We know that simply by picturing a danger, we can trigger the entire body responses of fight and flight. Now, this is also important. While your unconscious mind can't tell the difference between something you physically see and something you mentally picture, your conscious mind can. And your conscious mind needs to incorporate an evolving story to include and assemble the imagery as part of that story. Otherwise, unconscious messages that are there already in the brain will delete access to or believability of the imagery. So the key elements are three. Repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your vision need to be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. Secondly, consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story to be ultimately metabolized as part of the self, as a transformation of something as bedrock as the basic model of who and what you are, your identity. And be very specific about the experience of achieving the goal. And this is, you know, why it's important to have a very specific idea, to do it repeatedly, because you're revising your software by the affirmations. You're rewiring your brain by the vision of successfully attaining something. Now, remember that not everybody is visual. Some people are auditory. So their vision of success may be not pictures, but it may be the conversations of successfully attaining their goal. Or somebody who's kinesthetic is the entire experience, what they're doing, what that success is and feels like, and what kind of way they're putting it into action. So respect their individual way of doing that, but remember that this is about helping someone to create change that lasts. Now, a footnote also, write it down. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of about 40 seconds in short-term memory, then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. So this process of visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea, something specific and tangible. The experience changes the brain, so the vision can serve as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. Here's an illustration. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. On two occasions, he had broken 100 to get a 99. Everything else was triple digits. To preserve his sanity, he learned to visualize golf. He decided every day he would, in his mind, select his favorite golf course, saw himself get dressed in golfing clothes, experience everything in great detail, drove to the course, got out, warmed up, smelled the trees and the grass, made each stroke with his entire body, walked to the ball, After he was released from his captivity playing golf in his mind 7 days a week for 7 years, his first outing, he shot a 74. The power of a vision, mind over matters. Number four, in mapping changes. Insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, a complex new set of neural connections is created. If we were to look at an MRI scan of a brain, when somebody has an aha moment, a moment of insight, three different parts of their brain light up and they're vaulted into a state of mind that is more synthetic and integrative and creative. So an aha activates centers in the mind to release chemicals that further the process of wanting to learn and grow. When someone is given information, a directive, an order, or facts, nothing happens. No part of the brain lights up. So, as important as this insight-induced change is, the sustained attention is what hardwires it into the brain's circuits. And number five, take action. If you hear a voice saying, give you a quote from Vincent van Gogh. If you hear a voice say, "I'm not a painter," by all means paint. Then the voice will be silenced. Now, in terms of taking action, the world will not pay you for what you know. It will pay you for what you do. It rewards action. To analyze, plan, think, organize are all important. But payday and change come with action. Winners develop a plan, set it into motion. Now, it may not be perfect, but they may self-correct, keep moving forward, learning from their mistakes and producing results. This may be why a group of the brightest people anywhere with all kinds of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make something happen. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the second semester of community college owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. Now, the most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. Remember, we talked before that you don't have to be motivated to do something. All you have to have is a plan and to stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life separates the good from the great. At 211 degrees, water's hot. One more degree and it boils. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself and sell it out of the back of his car. To get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. To date, Jack Canfield has sold $1.5 billion worth of books. And number six, identity, and that was last week. Six, identity transformation. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized. The quantum Zeno effect. The mindset of identity then incorporates the new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a component of one's identity. Now, this doesn't just happen. This is a process, and this, at times, is a hard work miracle. This is something we're going to spend next seminar looking at in more detail so that it becomes integrated, not prone to be dismissed as a not me or attributed to luck or to circumstance. So I want to do a brief summary of steps four and five, decide what to change, and then about mapping the change, what we've talked about today. So this is bridging some from last seminar and today. since, and this is in the outline, since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate on new behaviors and not on problems in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying the problems won't solve them, but it's a beginning. Create new ways of thinking to stimulate brain circuits with an eye on the prize to lay new mental maps, a focus on the positive outcome. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning, left brain plus right brain, intellectual plus emotional. And when someone is grounded and centered, they are balanced. They are in an optimum state to have access to all of their states of mind and all the information in that. That's exactly what a cue of focus in the physiology, what a mantra does to establish being very grounded and centered and operating from within that state of mind of being grounded and centered to then access the specific state for whatever peak performance is, whether it's shooting a free throw or getting very grounded and centered before you receive a call from each client to be sure that you are 100% tuned in to that client. You have total access to all the information in your states of mind, that you have access to your intuitive power because that's going to inform some of what transpires in the co-created story with your client. Facilitate insight rather than give or follow advice. And, you know, we've talked in a number of ways that the idea of asking the right question, or the practice really, of asking the right question has way more power than giving people the right answers. Appreciative inquiry, which is what we do in coaching, can give you much better results than seeking and solving problems. When diverted to an old feeling or behavior, redirect a client's ideas and energy to the new ideas. Remember that the power is in the focus and that permanent change is from the consistency of that focus. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs energy and efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. And finally, think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experiences require thinking of yourself, your identity, in an evolving way, that you are no longer in the old story, that you are not your old story, you created it, but you are currently creating a new story. And whatever you think and feel and experience is what you create each moment. It's not there until you create it. Whatever you experience, you either create or you accept. So we're in discussion mode now. I'm interested in thoughts or questions or additions that you have to what we've talked about. I want to address a question that I was reminded of that was sent to me by email, and I appreciate your kind words and emails about what you're experiencing here. And it was about actually the kind of changes that we experience. Let me say it in a different way. Whenever we experience a belief, whenever we have a belief or know a fact, that's an anatomical reality in our brains. You don't just introduce a new idea and expect it's going to overwrite something that's there already, as we've talked about before. So this is why it's important to really begin where the client is, to see where they are, what their beliefs, what their assumptions are, and what their specific challenges are, so that we begin where they are. Because that's the best way, and in some sense, that's the only way to go to someplace new. You have to be with the client, then you can go someplace new together. So that's an important beginning, to resonate empathically, to understand, to really get what the client's experiencing, how they see or how they experience things. Then together in this co-created common ground that often the resonance with the client will allow, you can then go someplace new in a collaborative way. And that's what distinguishes coaching from every other kind of professional engagement. You are collaboratively co-creating a new story. You begin with where the client is. The client is the point of reference. You're facilitating, not ghostwriting that story. You're not running in plays, but you're facilitating that story. You're the catalyst for that process and the guide for the entire engagement that you're doing with that client. Thoughts or questions? How's this sounding to you?
David, this is Erica, and thank you very much for your words. I really appreciate that. I just want to make a comment that I realize that, as you know, someone has created a new identity, I can see where that could be a potential conflict with their community or their, you know, family of origin, for example, because if they have a new identity, then those people are having to, they're reacting to them in a different way, they're responding in different ways, so I imagine that we are also supporting that client in their change, how to react to the reactions of others, I guess, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And think about the different levels that are involved here. The first level, the first response, is an internal one, that the client is having some internal reaction to change. Their error detection mechanism saying this isn't right. They're looking at doing something in a slightly different way, and that creates discomfort. Think about how for example, if you play tennis, and you're really good at tennis, but you take a lesson from a pro, and there's a slight different way that the pro suggests that you stand when you do a forehand, a slightly different way you toss the ball, maybe just barely a different grip. Everything feels uncomfortable, and you're not where you were before. You don't have your old game. You don't have your new game in place yet. So you're in this uncomfortable in between. So there's a kind of change back pressure, because your brain is saying, if you just do it the right way, the way we expect, you'll get comfortable again. So there's that pressure. So there's also, as you suggested, there's change back pressure from a system. Anytime someone does something different, each of you know this too, your family, your organization, any group, they're going to have slight but subtle but definite change back pressure, not because they're out to get you or they want to sabotage you, but because that's their internal system responding to change out loud with you. So think about this when you experience a client being resistant to something. They're frustrated too. Think about it in this way. That client is doing the very best job possible of showing you precisely what it's like to be him or her. They're living their experience out loud with you, because remember, 90 to 95% of their operating system is unconscious. So how better can they show you what needs to change and what it's like to be them than to live it out loud with you, even though they may not be consciously aware of doing it? There's a very benevolent and powerful force inside to have them recreate the very essence of their experience with you, so that together you can understand it and engage in change, because this is going to be the model that they download about how to deal with this. The other 23 hours that they're not talking to you, and the other 6 days that they don't talk to you at all, and they're only having this conversation with you in their head. And they're having to deal with people who are giving them change back pressure messages all along. So this is a model that needs to sustain itself, and your resonance with that and helping them understand what's going on and to expect discomfort and to reframe that as a signpost of progress. Validation of moving ahead can help them in that transformation of creating a new identity because they have a new framework in which to fit experiences. Make sense?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and that's why it's such a challenge to make changes that last, because it involves revising mind software and rewiring brain hardware and doing that together in a collaborative way while you're talking about other stuff. So it's an art and a science. And that's why looking at things strategically, specifically, having a stepwise process, looking at goals and a way to back into them to stepwise do that, those are all important parts, and those are part of what we bring in our expertise as coaches. And to look at it in a systematic way can inform each of us in that process. And the roadmap is simply one system of doing that. So I know we're out of time. Thank you for your attention, energy, and the feedback in the session and in the emails. If there's a question we didn't get to, either jot it down or fire me an email, and we'll pick up right here for our final seminar next week. Have a great rest of the week, and I look forward to picking up with you. Bye.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.